Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, June the 8th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, in Paris, it feels like summer has come to an abrupt end. We have like cold weather here and rain. I don't know how things are in England, but suddenly it's not sunny anymore here.
Yeah, it's a little bit chillier here, but it's not too bad for sure.
All right. So let's see, lots to discuss this week. I mean, I don't even know where to start, but I think I'm going to start with some of the small things. So, you know, essays and deadlines continue to come out. I think we mentioned last week that we've got Harvard, Wharton, Columbia, I think INSEAD and Cambridge, they're all announced and out, at least the deadlines, in some cases the essays as well. We track all that stuff on our website. There's a landing page for deadlines. There's a landing page for essay topic analyses as we get those together. So great place to go and stay on top of new deadlines. I also wanted to point out, we did a story about Michigan Ross and their creation of, I guess, kind of like a pandemic internship program. So as we know, like internships haven't been so easy to come by for students graduating into this current, you know, economic climate. So Ross put together, very, very smart move, they put together this program that allows current students to go and do virtual work with executives at companies around the world. And, you know, they've tapped into their alumni network to make this happen. They're sponsoring companies. And so it's a great way to make sure that people aren't losing ground despite everything, you know, that's going on. And they've also made the internship a part of their curriculum, which allows them, I think that's going to be for the class of 2022 and on. I think that allows them to protect against the idea that if the first semester this coming fall is online and you're an international student showing up in the U.S. to join your classmates and have a on-campus experience in like January, ordinarily, like you wouldn't necessarily have been able to stay in the U.S. and work for the summer. But if they make the internship part of the curriculum, you can work. I think it's, I can't remember the acronym, maybe CPT is the, something like curricular practical training or something like that. I'm going to get it wrong, but so Ross is doing things to help, their students, which I thought was great to see.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense, Graham. And frankly, because the internship experience is such an ingrained part of the 2-year MBA, experience, it makes sense to me that the internship is a required aspect of that. Whilst I understand the reasons for them doing that, I think generally it should be part of the required curriculum anyway.
Yep. Yeah. And then two more news items. So one is we announced at long last the Clear Admit Admissions Academy, which is going to be a class that we're running over the course of the summer, kind of a webinar series. There are six classes, and the first one kicks off on Tuesday, June 23rd at 12 p.m. Eastern. You can sign up for the series of classes on our site. It's really easy. It's free. For now, you know, I don't know what we're going to do about volume, but we'll keep an eye on that. But spaces may end up having to be limited. Demand's going to be pretty good. So we'll see. But sign up now if you're hearing this before it gets to be too late. And just so people know, we're going to have the first session is going to be about applying to business school during, you know, kind of COVID-19. What does that mean for the process? We're going to do, you know, an episode about choosing target schools, a whole episode dedicated to essay writing, which I'm hoping we can get a special guest for. We'll have an episode about recommendation letters, an episode about the application forms and short answers and all these other odds and ends that go into an application. And then obviously we'll do a whole session on Zoom. It's the kind of thing you can do with us over the course of the summer and get to know a group of fellow applicants and yeah, just have some fun. And it's going to be a first for us and it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it actually. And you know, the first session, I think applying during COVID-19, I think it's going to be really super interesting because things are different for applicants coming into this upcoming season.
Yeah.
And we need to address that up front. And that webinar gives us a real chance to do that.
Yeah, agreed. So the last bit of news I wanted to get your take on, it's a kind of the biggest news item of the week. And that is that, you know, HBS announced that they're going to have a smaller class this fall. So the class of 2022 is going to be somewhere between 700 and 720 students. Usually HBS is more north of 900 students, so it's about a 20% decline in the size of the student body. They mentioned that, you know, they'd offered deferrals to anyone, and that they gave people a window between May 15 and June 1 to decide if they wanted a deferral. HBS reserved the right to defer you either 1 or 2 years. And it sounds like when the dust settled and all those, you know, responses were in, they were a couple hundred students short of a normal class size. And I think they are going to go to their wait list and take, they say, you know, 20, 30 kids or so to kind of deal with usual melt and make sure the class rounds out. But it sounds like they're not digging deep into the list to kind of get up to the 900 or something. So what's your take on this? It's kind of an interesting move. And I mean, the whole way they played this was sort of unusual and not exactly how every other school's been handling it. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, very super interesting, honestly. One, I, like you, I think, Graham, I absolutely applaud their transparency through this whole last 2 or 3 months, because clearly admitted candidates and others are super anxious about what's going on, how it's going to impact their learning experience, and so on and so forth. And I think Harvard's been very upfront about how they've dealt with this situation. And, you know, offering open deferrals as they did is symptomatic of that, and I completely applaud them. That said, I was absolutely shocked when I saw the news, quite frankly, that they were taking a class of 700. You know, I was looking, is it April 1st? What's the story here? And, you know, then to sort of say, you know, obviously, you know, they can argue that the quality is consistent. I mean, I absolutely understand that. All these candidates applied in rounds one and round two before COVID-19. So there's no letting folks in an extended deadlines that might not have passed muster earlier on, sort of suspicion. But I really am puzzled how they're getting that international diversity to the same level that they claim that they have from previous classes. So to me, the math doesn't quite work out in that regard. Mm-hmm. So I'll be interested to see their class profile when they publish that in the fall, to see that international diversity, that hasn't been compromised at all. But nevertheless, yeah, I absolutely super interesting that they've gone this route. It has absolute consequences in the, you know, admissions pipeline in terms of other MBA programs, because at the end of the day, Harvard and Stanford live on the top of the heap at this point. And, you know, if they make a decision to go to the wait list and various other things, it's trickle down effect to other schools. So Harvard is basically saying, we're not going to do that, you know, other than, you know, maybe 20 or 30 students. So that's a sigh of relief for those schools that sit behind Harvard and Stanford, I guess. But yeah, quite frankly, Graham, I was extremely surprised.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, what's interesting about this is how many different angles you can, you know, approach this from. So for example, one thing to think about is like, what is a school that normally has 900 plus and that goes to 700 or so, what does that mean for the student experience? Like, will it be, you know, the same? Will they just still have the same section sizes of 90 or so students? And so, you know, most people, their first year at Harvard is really all about their section anyway. And so for them, it'll be really similar. Or will they go to a smaller section size with an eye to like maybe figuring out a way to do more social distancing or something? Although between me and you, whether they have 90 kids in those lecture halls or 70 isn't going to cut it in terms of social distancing. What I've heard schools are contemplating is taking those giant 100-person lecture halls and putting like 20-person electives in them to allow for people to spread out, right? So whether there's 90 or 70 is not going to, I don't think, move the meter there.
Right.
But it just is interesting to think about, like, will the class of 2022 be that like one kind of closer knit HBS experience or something? I don't know. And that's just like one angle, right? You could also approach this from the side of like, what does this mean for those applying in the next couple of years to HBS when you look and say, gosh, you know, there's going to be a couple hundred kids who are deferring into one or the, you know, the next couple of years, right? So there's some spots that are like reserved. And so are we going to see really low acceptance rates coupled with more applications than usual because of the economy and, you know, the kind of recession that's being brought on by COVID-19? So there's just so many, I mean, and you actually alluded to the idea that you could also talk about what does this mean for Wharton or Columbia or MIT or schools that might lose people when HBS goes to a wait list and are probably now saying, oh, okay, they're only going to take 20 or 30 kids. No big deal. Obviously, if Harvard was going to go digging to get 200 candidates from the, you know, that would really have had a massive impact on everyone else in the top 10 and beyond. I mean, I just, that would have had a real ripple effect. So,
yeah, I'd say the other thing to consider, though, Graham, is let's say Harvard had, it dropped its class size by 20% based off of folks that wanted a deferral if it was offered, right? That's seems to be the outcome of this, right?
Yeah.
So does that mean that at every other top program, 20% of those folks that have been admitted want to defer, right? So you've got to ask yourself, is Harvard going to be any different to the other schools? Or in essence, are we looking at 20% of the admitted pool wants out this season? Whether the schools are being liberal with offering these deferrals or not, at the end of the day, are they going to lose that 20% or have folks enrolling under duress or whatever it is? I mean, to me, that 20% is a huge figure.
Yeah, I think it's inflated in the sense that, I Harvard was really transparent and said, hey, if you want one, we'll give it to you. Whereas most schools are kind of taking more of a case-by-case approach. And so I don't think most schools are going to lose that high of a percentage because the stakes are too high for the candidate. Obviously, HBS was saying, we'll defer you and you can come, you know, either next year or the year after. They weren't putting candidates in a position of saying, we might grant you a deferral or we might just say no. And then, you know, so I don't know, but it is. Yeah, you're right. It's tricky. And how does this all, how does this play out? Like what kind of melt are schools going to see and what percentage of that melt is going to come from the international pool? And we ran a survey where we recently talked to all these admitted students, and we talked to like 500 of them, and the survey results are up on our site. And there's a lot of interesting data there. You know, like for example, people seem okay with up to like 3 months of online instruction to start the program, but anything beyond that, they're not so keen on, right? And, we dove deep into all this stuff.
Yeah, frankly, we should have mentioned this that at the beginning too. Folks would be well informed to go check those survey results because there's some really interesting data in there. But I just think overall, I mean, obviously we could talk about this stuff through the entire show. We need to get to these ApplyWire and DecisionWire folks. But I think that 20% number, I think I could rightly say that it surprised a lot of people. That's a high number.
Yeah, I agree. And again, so many angles to think about this through, but definitely interesting times. And I'll be curious to next time I connect with Chad Losey at HBS just to kind of find out how this all played out. And yeah, I mean, I just would love to know, like, of the people who deferred, like, was there an even balance or was it more international students and so on, you know?
And what happens now, Graham, to the folks that didn't defer? They're international, but they still can't get the visa because the consulates or whatever that you call those places have not opened in time and they haven't been able to process the paperwork.
Yeah, and actually our survey said when we asked candidates about this, only 5% of admitted students to top programs reported that they'd already gotten their visa.
Right.
Now, most did think they could get it by late summer, but I think it's going to be touch and go. It depends on the market, too. I mean, you know, some markets are going to be easier to get it.
Yeah, if we get a second wave, with all these, I mean, the other dreadful thing, obviously, that occurred last week or two is obviously the protests and the movements against the dreadful incident in
Minneapolis,
Minnesota, right? So, I mean, I hate to say it, but something like that could stimulate a second wave.
Right.
Which then creates further issues, getting those international students on board. Anyway, again, we could talk about this forever. this is a fast moving situation, but this 20% number, I think, sort of stood out for a lot of people.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so let's dive in and do our wiretaps. You've got one DecisionWire and two ApplyWire folks that we're going to talk about. And actually, a great segue in that the first candidate we're going to talk about is a DecisionWire entry, where this idea of COVID-19 and the kind of protests and curfews and riots and everything that's been going on in the U.S. is potentially a factor in this person's decision-making process. So let's talk about wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is undecided, and they've been admitted to Columbia, INSEAD, London Business School, Kellogg, and NYU Stern. And that's actually the exact list of schools that they applied to. So they ran the table. They're starting this fall. Post-MBA career, they just listed other. So I don't know exactly what they want to do. GMAT score was 720. And the person indicates that they applied to all of these programs in round three or four, or, you know, kind of the rolling stuff. But before the kind of last minute COVID-19 round, as some called it. So this to me means they probably applied to these schools in like March, is my guess, before schools started to extend deadlines, but late round apps all the same. They got into all of them, no scholarship money at any, and they're wondering if they have room to negotiate something, or are all the dollars gone because it's late in the season? And so, yeah, so some discussion ensued. What's your take on this candidate? I mean, where should this person go? They did mention that they're from New Zealand and hope to return there in the long term, and that the schools have good brand there.
Yeah, very interesting, I think. The person's from New Zealand. They plan to go back to New Zealand. I have to say, it's a complete, probably nothing to do with this particular conversation. But I did two admissions events in New Zealand when I worked at the Wharton School, and it was oddly the first time Wharton had ever done admissions events in New Zealand, because I had fitted in with a tour I was doing that also took in the Melbourne Cup and various other things.
Well, didn't they try to send
Australia,
you?
But
I thought the team at Wharton used to try to send you as far away as they could from campus. So.
Well, I stayed away for 3 weeks on that trip. It was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is an interesting candidate, because, you know, they're from New Zealand. That's a big plus right there, because there truly aren't too many outstanding candidates coming out of New Zealand going to top tier business schools. So it doesn't surprise me that they ran the table in terms of the schools that they applied, if obviously they are a top tier candidate and they had a good GMAT score, so I presume the rest of it's also very good. They sort of, and why it's interesting for this conversation is they indicated out of all the schools that they probably going to go to Columbia up until the last week or two, and they're now nervous because, you know, obviously they're seeing all the issues that are going on in the United States right now with the handling of COVID-19. And obviously the issues that COVID-19 presented in New York City, which is well documented, I think, and more recently the disturbances caused by the incident from Minneapolis, which was shocking in of itself. So now they're nervous whether they really should be going to Columbia, which was their choice, or, you know, quite frankly, Graham, I mean, they could go to any of these schools and get a fantastic experience to bring back to New Zealand, and maybe going to Kellogg would be a smarter choice at this point. Could make the argument London Business School in Seattle or whatever, but I mean, clearly, you know, issues that you wouldn't think should impact someone's decision on which top tier business school to go to actually are starting to seep into the decision making, especially for international students that are probably not as familiar with the landscape in the United States and so forth.
Yeah, so this is a tough one. I'll try and be brief because I think you covered a lot of it, but I just feel like there's some missing information here for me. So I don't know, like, what field's this person coming from? What do they want to do after business school? Because on the surface, you could argue that, look, these are all, as you said, these are all great schools. I mean, you might say Kellogg's kind of the top ranked, but, you know, Columbia is also right there. INSEAD and LBS, arguably the leading schools in Europe, and certainly, you know, peers of the schools like a Columbia and stuff. So Stern might be a slightly lower rank, but I mean, these are all really good schools. But I would love to know, like, does this person want to work in consulting or finance or, you know, tech, or like what's the plan? Because that would help me to give that person some input. I also think that they're absolutely right. Like they're worried a little bit about, oh, is New York the best place to be? I mean, these are factors they're going to be moving. They mentioned that they're moving, they're going to move, he, I guess it's a he, because he's moving with, where does it say? Oh yeah, he mentioned that his wife, that it's his wife's dream to live in New York. So they're kind of like, hey, let's go to Columbia. And so, I don't, this is not an obvious call, because on the surface, you could say, well, you know, Kellogg, slightly higher ranked, beautiful new facilities, right on the water, north of Chicago, in an almost kind of suburban setting, so not like right downtown, less dense. And so you could argue that, gee, might be a better place to kind of be, and you could go visit New York City on weekends, take a week's vacation there or something. Like, you'll be in the U.S., it'll be pretty close. So,
right.
But I don't know what they want to do. You know, if they're interested in like value investing, well, then, you know, kind of like, gosh, Columbia is like, you know, headquarters for that. If they want to do marketing or consulting, then, you know, you might say, gee, you know, INSEAD and Kellogg are powerhouses for that, right? So I just, I need more information, but I mean, I'm confident this person's going to land on, you know, on his feet. It's just, yeah, hard to give advice beyond with the limited info that we've got here.
Yeah. The other thing, the candidate did ask about negotiating scholarship. So they got all these offers, but no scholarship. And I would say, you know, there's no cost to negotiating scholarship. So submitting that sort of request. And again, at this late stage, if they have a really good profile, which I imagine they have, and they're coming from New Zealand, which adds to that diversity, it's like, come on, just, you might as well make the ask. You know, even if they don't have what we would call the classic negotiating weapon, i.e. an offer from a similar school with the scholarship that you want to then bargain against. But nevertheless, I absolutely would encourage this person to see what they can shake out.
Yeah, and it's hard to know. I mean, I agree. You won't get anything if you don't ask. It's also hard to know, like, to the extent that people are dropping out of the pool, admitted students are saying, I can't come. There might be money coming back to schools where they thought they were going to give a scholarship to someone and they're not going to. So there could be some extra money. Also, it could be that schools are tightening the belt and saying, nope, any money you didn't spend at the early part, you're not going to get back to redistribute to late round candidates. But I don't know, but I think it never hurts to ask. I wouldn't ask all of them. Like, I would probably just focus in on the one that you really want and see if you can negotiate a little bit. It's tough when you don't have an offer from one of them, but you never know. Never know. It doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah, but I mean, frankly, Graham, this guy has got offers. You got Columbia, Kellogg, LBS, and INSEAD, all comparably, like, right at the top of the heap.
Yeah.
I mean, Stern is, you know, obviously extremely good too. But the point is, you know, if you put it, you if you ask Columbia for scholarship and made it clear that you've been admitted to some of these other schools, I mean, they got to be pretty hard-nosed to decide, well, do they really want you or not? And if they really want you, they're going to make you an offer.
Right, right. Yeah, fair enough.
And if they don't really want you, they can't rescind the admit offer. So it's not like it's going to cost you.
Right, right. So let's move on and talk about the next wiretaps candidate. But I did want to mention something related to our earlier discussion about HBS and their smaller class. You know, HBS only has round one and round two. So they were done taking applications in January, was the last time someone could apply. And so I think one thing that's interesting to consider, because this person brings it to mind, they applied to all these top schools late in the game. And so HBS may not have benefited from getting a big stockpile of late round apps where they could have built a bigger wait list or you know, had people to go to. So that may have played a role in this too. Like, this may have been one of those few years where HBS was like, wow, I wish we still had that round three, you know? That's just a sidebar, but I thought it was kind of an interesting connection. Let's talk about wiretaps candidate number two. So this is an ApplyWire entry. And this person is applying to Berkeley, UCLA Anderson, and USC Marshall, or should I say has applied, because they're looking to start this fall. They threw in some late applications. They have a background in operations with startups, I believe in kind of ed tech stuff, and they want to work in tech after business school, hoping to work for a brand name like Amazon or Google. The GMAT score was 750, GPA 3.39, 4 years of work experience, and this person's located in the San Francisco Bay Area. She is part of the Forte MBA Launch Program, which is a great program. If you're a female candidate, just beginning to explore, applying to business school. The MBA launch program at Forte is really great. They kind of pair you off with a mentor. You get all these like sort of tips and kind of training on how to be successful in the admissions process and a great network and everything. So she's part of that. She had a lot of extracurriculars focused on college access. She mentioned that her undergraduate school had grade deflation. So presumably that 3.39 is actually better than it might seem. And which makes me wonder if she went to Swarthmore where I went, because Swarthmore was awful for grades. and then she mentioned very importantly that she loves the podcast. So what's your take on this candidate? What do you think of her chances and her strategy here with the late round apps?
I think she's brilliant because she loves the podcast. All right. Based on anything else, I mean, honestly, Graham, is this candidate still working in a good situation in ed tech startups? Because if she is, I would really hold off these apps and go gung-ho early rounds next season. Haas, Anderson, Marshall, they're all very good schools, no doubt. And you might say Haas is actually maybe a notch above the other two or whatever. But When I was looking at this, and I know you said the same thing in your comments. I mean, you're wondering why isn't this person applying to Stanford? Why aren't they applying to Harvard, Wharton, and a couple of other M7 programs? There's a lot to like here in terms of what I've been looking at. Obviously, outstanding GMAT, presumably decent GPA, she's a math major. If they've done really well in the startup world, can show impact, they do well on the extracurriculars and stuff, it's like, wow, this person really is a superstar, potentially, or looks like a superstar in development and so forth. And could very well, you know, if they end up going to Haas or Anderson or Marshall, could certainly have a great career and prospects going forward. But, you know, the very, very super elite schools, maybe those prospects just ratchet up another notch. Now, it could well be that given the COVID-19 situation, her career situation has changed, and that's why she decided to apply late this season. I know there will be a bunch of people in that bucket that are waiting for their round three and extended deadline results. But if this person is still working, Graham, and in a good, decent situation, I would really wonder if she's selling herself short just a little bit here.
Yeah, and I, because I read her post so quickly when I was commenting on it on the website, I just had thought, oh, this is someone thinking about next year and these are the schools. And I was like, sort of like, why didn't you add Stanford or Harvard? And then, you know, she chimed in and said, oh, I've applied to these and it's late round and I'll just see what happens. But I agree with you. I mean, I think the move here is if she is working still, then I would continue working and I would apply in round one to the very best. Maybe she gets an offer from one of these schools and can defer it and have that in her back pocket as she goes through the process, you know, this coming year. But I kind of see these numbers and hearing about her background in the comments. I'm thinking, you know, this person could go to one of the best in the world. Although, I mean, again, Berkeley and UCLA and USC are all terrific schools. And, you know, if someone's an achiever like this person is, they're going to do well regardless. But I don't know, when I see a profile like this, I think, you know, why not, you know, try to get into the very best you can. At least have the option, you know, to explore all these different programs. So that was my take. But again, great profile, and so glad to have another fan of the podcast out there. So thanks for that post. Anything else, or should we move on to our final Wiretaps person for this week?
No, I think that's basically summed it up for this candidate. I mean, they're going to be very successful whatever they choose to do, I'm sure, but yeah, our advice is our advice.
All right, so Wiretaps candidate number three. So this candidate, I don't think I can even read all the schools. They're applying to 17 schools. And I will just say it's basically the U.S. top 17 or so, top 15, and LBS is thrown in there as a non-U.S. option. And they want to start next fall, so 2021. They've been working in public relations and e-commerce, focus on apparel. And post-MBA, they're hoping to do consulting, technology, media. Essentially, they want to work with a consulting firm, but yeah, I think they basically would like to get do something with a consulting firm that's going to be like e-commerce consulting for, you know, for some of the, presumably, apparel companies or things like that. So very specific goal. The GRE is a 327, GPA 3.7. And this person has 10 years of work experience, currently located in India, and would love to end up in New York or California post-MBA. So you had some dialogue with this candidate. There are a lot of kind of interesting elements here.
Yeah.
So maybe you can elaborate on them, because I think in particular getting that sort of undergrad, and they actually have a grad degree. So getting all that background in here would be important.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, Graham, I think this candidate is a classic case of execution. App execution is going to be so super critical. There are a lot of sort of moving parts here, threading the story together and making it cogent, making it easily understandable to the ADCOM is going to be of high importance. In their defense, they're not going to apply to 17 schools. They're early in the process of considering. So these are just sort of part of their sort of top of the funnel sort of list of schools. They're going to narrow that list down as they learn more about where they better fit. They have a couple of degrees. It looks like both degrees out of the US. So one of my bits of feedback, and this is sort of more broadly in terms of the podcast, is you want to avoid coming across as what we would classically consider as a degree collector. You're just out to get another degree. So I made that point to this candidate. But it's... You know, they've got a couple of degrees. It looks like they've got some experience from the US. They're now currently back in India. I'm assuming they're of Indian heritage. I don't know if I know that for sure. But, you know, they've got to, you know, make their story well understandable. It looks like they've done some interesting things in the public relations space. They've run their own business and so on and so forth. So that's quite interesting. They also have this other side of them in terms of they've done some identity advocacy, which I'm not exactly sure what that means, but nevertheless, it's something that they're absolutely passionate about. They've done TEDx talks on this topic. They've done some other stuff related to it in terms of mentoring and so forth. So I think that that's an interesting element of their application that they can draw from. But most importantly is sort of execution, really sort of getting that story correct. And probably if they are of Indian heritage, making sure they do apply early.
Yeah, agreed. I had a bunch of questions after I looked at this profile. Like one was, well, how old is this person? You know, they have 10 years of experience. They already have a master's in PR, I guess. And so I was kind of like, is this person like 34, which makes it a bit more of an uphill battle to go to some of these top schools who, you know, the average age is more like 27, 28. They worry about older candidates. We've talked on the podcast before. Can an older candidate really dive in and, you know, contribute to the student body? Or are they going to just sort of show up, get their degree and go? Lots of like things they need to be wary of as they enter the admissions process. I also... just wasn't sure where the work experience took place. I would say on the margin, if this person is of Indian descent and currently in India, having the U.S. Education can be helpful. It shows the admissions team right out of the gate that this person can, you know, thrive in a U.S. educational environment. But I also would be curious to know if some of the work experience was stateside as well, or maybe even if they're, maybe they were naturalized or have the right to work in the U.S. too. Like all these things are factors that would be just interesting to know.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I agree, the TEDx talk on identity could be an interesting angle. I'd love to know more about that because I, like you, I wasn't really sure, is this, you know, kind of gender identity stuff? Is it just, it was just hard to, there wasn't enough information here. So I just need to know that.
I mean, I assume that's what it was.
Yeah, so that could be really interesting and a nice opportunity for them to connect with like the LGBT, communities at the schools they're targeting. So all kinds of inroads. The one thing I wanted to mention, I would be remiss if I did not, is they have a 327 on the GRE. They're only applying to business schools, so far as I can see from the list and from their comments. And they're talking about taking it again. And so like immediately two questions sprung to my mind. I'm like, they have a 3.7 undergrad and a 327 GPA, which is, I mean, that's like the average score or maybe even above the average score at like Stanford. So that's a good, GRE score. And I just wondered, like, why are they focusing on taking it again? And maybe even also, like, why the GRE and not the GMAT if they were focused on business school right out of the gate? I mean, I know now people take either, it's fine, but I just was wondering, like, obviously if this person is like a test guru and thinks they can really hit a home run, on the margin, like seeing like a 780 on the GMAT might be more powerful than a 330 on the GRE or something. So just something to think about. I wasn't really clear as to why they're going to do another test when they might have work to do in other areas of their candidacy. Like you talked about execution and, you know, the essays and stuff. So did you have any thoughts on that aspect?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I would say, and this is maybe just a hunch on my part, but in terms of my experience with the industry, I mean, if you're looking at the very, very best schools like Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, you know, I think your 327 GRE is going to be perfectly fine, in terms of it won't get you eliminated and it won't necessarily get you admitted, right?
Right.
It's just going to check box and we're going to look at all the other stuff before we make a decision. But as you sort of move down the tiers a bit, maybe not the next tier, but into sort of that top 16 program, if you've got a candidate that really has blown the test out of the ballpark, I think that can really move the needle a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, overrepresented too.
Yeah, so this person's applying or considering, you know, a pretty broad sort of selection. They've got reach schools and target schools and safety schools, but certainly those target and safeties, they might get really excited about a 330 GRE or something like that.
Right.
If the person can push it up several points. So, yeah, maybe bear that in mind. I think what the point to retaking the test is, what can this candidate do between now and the round one application deadlines to move the needle? And if one of the things that they can do is bump up their test score, if they can't change their work situation, they can't get on more interesting projects, they can't obviously improve their academics, they can't get more involved in their communities or whatever, but they can retake the test. Yeah, maybe they can do that, right? So it's definitely something to consider, but certainly, as you say, a 327 out the gate is a very good score, and obviously supported by a 3.7 GPA. I mean, the academics is not going to be a question.
Yeah, although I think you're convincing me a little bit, especially if this person feels like they can take the test. They mentioned it's July 1 is their retest date.
Yeah.
And so if they can take it July 1 and then really turn their attention towards all the essay writing they're going to need to do and coaching their recommenders and everything else that goes into the process of a successful application, then I'm okay with it. And I think, yeah, if they feel like they're going to move the meter and have a score that's not like 328, you know, that's going to actually be a nice jump up, then I hear what you're saying. Again, if this person is Indian, they're overrepresented, right, in the pool. And so whatever you can do, and also they're older. And one thing that's interesting is older candidates often have lower standardized testing scores. And the reason for that, I've always thought, is because they're further away from being in school. And, you know, you're obviously your best at taking these tests right when you graduate from college. So I think it will help their cause to have both a high GPA and a high test score. So yeah, best of luck to this person as they kind of hone in on what they want to do, you know, post-MBA, which schools they're going to kind of select out of this group. Ideally, they narrow it down to, you know, five or six schools with a, you know, couple of reaches, couple of target and a safety or two, right? So, it's an interesting candidacy and they certainly, they can make it work. It just, they need to be wary of what it means to be an older candidate and what it means to be overrepresented and stuff. So hopefully they can navigate all this stuff.
Very good.
So that brings us to the end. I guess we'll be back in 1 week's time with another set of wire entries to dissect. Alex, thanks for picking these out as always. And who knows what the next week will bring. Obviously that Harvard news was a real big news for this week. So we'll see what next week has in store.
Very good. Good luck, everybody. Take care. Stay safe.